Hello, and welcome to yet another podcast from Cory Doctorow. This is part three of my reading of my new story, iRobot, a story that's very raw and as yet unpublished. I'm still working out where to publish it. Continues to be part of my stories, talking about a singularity and Asimovism and robots and the ideas that predominated in science fiction in the 50s and the ideas that predominate in science fiction here in the noughties. I just got back from Rome, had my anniversary there. It was quite lovely. I haven't been to Rome since I was a little kid, and it was spectacular. The antiquity and the modernism side by side, well, if you've been to Rome, you know what it's like, and if you haven't, you can't imagine it, and the food was spectacular. Someone needs to invent a way to eat just unlimited amounts of food without any negative consequences and without getting full, because there's so much to eat in Rome that I just could have eaten from the moment we got up till the moment we went to bed. A little plug, we stayed in a great hotel, the Residencia A. If you find yourself going to Rome and you're looking for a good hotel, this had 7 little rooms, and each one had high-speed internet, although not very reliable high-speed internet, but still better than everywhere else we checked out. They were just super friendly and super nice, and the rooms were great, kind of arty and decorated. The big news is that I finished my new novel, Little Brother, while I was in Rome one morning about 7 a.m. on Sunday. It's at least the third of my 4 novels that I finished in a hotel room. I think I finished Down and Out of the Magic Kingdom in a hotel room, but I actually don't remember. But the other three, Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town, Eastern Standard Tribe, and now Little Brother, I finished them all in hotel rooms. Something about hotel rooms and writing. Anyway, boy, it's a great book, if I do say so myself, in the sense that having finished it, I feel really good about how it turned out, and I'm really enjoying going back and rereading it and, you know, fixing up the typos and refactoring the chapters and writing a new outline to conform to the way the book was written so that my agent will have an accurate, up-to-date outline when he goes to sell the book. Just spectacular. The other news, I don't remember if I mentioned this before, my publisher of my short story collection, 4 Walls, 8 Windows, which has since been subsumed into a larger publisher called Avalon, they've bought another short story collection from me called Overclocked. And Overclocked will be coming out sometime in the next year or so. And it's all good news. Overclocked, stories of the future present. And I'll have more as that deal progresses. And we've got cover art and a publication date and all the rest of it. And now I am in the flat waiting for a painter, as I was last time, to come by and quote on the paint job and waiting and boxing stuff up. Thank you very much to Quinn Norton for coming by yesterday and boxing an amazing amount of stuff up here. She was amazing, and the flat is largely in boxes now, although boxing stuff up is a little like Zeno's arrow. You know, you box everything up, and you think, well, you know, that's 90% of the work done in one day, and then you box everything up, and that's 90% of the remaining work done in one day, and then you box everything up, and 90% of the remaining work has been done in one day, and it seems like you never actually get to the point where everything has been boxed up. I don't know, maybe we need an insurance fire or something. All right, enough complaining. Los Angeles is in, like, 10 days. What is it, the 4th? Yeah, we land in L.A. in 10 days. And a year of life in America will begin, and all of this moving stuff will be done, and it will be exciting as hell. And without further ado, here's a little more of iRobot. They steamed all night and put up further inland, where there was a handsome wreck. Robbie felt the Free Spirit drop its mooring lines and looked over the instrumentation data. The wreck was the only feature for kilometers, a stretch of ocean floor desert that stretched away from shore to reef, and practically every animal that lived between those two places made its home in the wreck, so it was a kind of Eden for marine fauna. Robbie detected the volatile aromatics floating up from the kitchen exhaust, the first breakfast smells of fruit salad and toasted nuts, a light snack before the first dive of the day. When they got back from it, there'd be a second breakfast up and ready, eggs and toast and waffles and bacon and sausage. The human shells ate whatever you gave them, but Robbie remembered clearly how the live humans had praised these feasts as he rode them out to their morning dives. He lowered himself into the water and rowed himself around to the aft deck by the stairwells and dipped his oars to keep him stationary relative to the ship. Before long, Janet, Kate, he reminded himself firmly, was clomping down the stairs in her scuba gear, fins in one hand. She climbed into the boat without a word, and a moment later Isaac followed her. Isaac stumbled as he stepped over Robbie's gunwales, and Robbie knew, in that instant, that this wasn't Isaac any longer. Now there were two humans on the ship, two humans in his charge. "Hi, I'm Robbie," he said. Isaac, whoever he was, didn't say a word, just stared at Kate, who looked away. "Did you sleep well, Kate?" Kate jumped when he said her name, and Isaac hooted. "Kate, it is you! I knew it!" She stamped her foot against Robbie's floor. "You followed me. I told you not to follow me," she said. "Would you like to hear about our dive site?" Robbie said self-consciously, dipping his oars and pulling for the wreck. "You said quite enough," Kate said. "By the first law, I demand silence." "That's the second law," Robbie said. "Okay, I'll let you know when we get there." "Kate," Isaac said, "I know you don't want me here, but I had to come. We need to talk this out." "There's nothing to talk out," she said. "It's not fair." Isaac's voice was anguished. "After everything I went through..." She snorted. "That's enough of that," she said. Robbie said, "Dive site up ahead? You two really need to check out each other's gear." Of course they were qualified. You had to at least install the qualifications before you could get onto the Free Spirit. And the human shells had a lot of muscle memory to help. So they were technically able to check each other out, that much was sure. They were palpably reluctant to do so, though, and Robbie had to give them guidance. "I'll count 1, 2, 3, Wallaby," Robbie said. "Go over on Wallaby. I'll wait for you here. There's not much current today." With a last huff, they went over the edge. Robbie was once again alone with his thoughts. The feed from their telemetry was very low bandwidth when they were underwater, though he could get the high res when they surfaced. He watched them on his radar, first circling the ship. It was very crowded. Dawn was fish rush hour. And exploring its decks, finally swimming below the decks, LED torches glowing. There were some knife reef sharks down below, and really handsome giant schools of purple fish. Robbie rode around them, puttering back and forth to keep over top of them. That occupied about 1/10 millionth of his consciousness. Times like this, he often slowed himself right down, ran so cool that he was barely awake. Today, though, he wanted to get online. He had a lot of feeds to pick through, see what was going on around the world with his buddies. More importantly, he wanted to follow up on something Kate had said. They must be online by now, right? Somewhere out there, the reef that bounded the coral sea was online and making new mistakes. Robbie had rowed over practically every centimeter of that reef, had explored its extent with his radar. It had been his constant companion for decades, and to be frank, his feelings had been hurt by the reef's rudeness when it woke. The net is too big to merely search. Too much of it is offline, or unroutable, or light-speed lagged, or merely probabilistic, or self-aware, or infected, to know its extent. But Robbie's given this some thought. Coral reefs don't wake up. They get woken up. They get a lot of neural peripherals, starting with a nervous system, and some tutelage in using them. Some capricious upload god had done this, and that personage would have a handle on where the reef was hanging out online. Robbie hardly ever visited the new sphere. Its rarefied heights were spooky to him, especially since so many of the humans there considered Asimovism to be hokum. They refused to even identify themselves as humans, and argued that the first and second laws didn't apply to them. Of course, Asimovists didn't care, at least not officially. The point of faith was the worshipper's relationship to it. But here he was, looking for high reliability nodes of discussion on coral reefs. The natural place to start was Wikipedia, where warring clades had been revising each other's edits furiously, trying to establish an authoritative record on reef mind. Paging back through the edit history, he found a couple of handles for the pro-reef mind users, and from there he was able to look around for other sites where those handles appeared, resolving the namespace collisions of other users with the same names and forked instances of the same users. Robbie was able to winnow away at the net until he found some contact info. He steadied himself and checked on the nitrox remaining in the diver's bottles, then made a call. "I don't know you." The voice was distant and cool, far cooler than any robot. Robbie said a quick rosary of the three laws and plowed forward. "I'm calling from the Coral Sea," he said. "I want to know if you have an email address for the reef."
"You've met them. What are they like? Are they beautiful?"
"They're..." Robbie considered a moment. They killed a lot of parrotfish. I think they're having a little adjustment problem."
"That happens. I was more worried about the zooxanthellae, the algae they use for photosynthesis. Would they expel it? Racial cleansing is so ugly."
"How would you know if they'd expelled it?"
"The reef would go white, bleached. You wouldn't be able to miss it."
"How'd they react to you?"
They weren't very happy to see me, Robbie admitted. That's why I wanted to have a chat with them before I went back.
You shouldn't go back, the distant voice said.
Robbie tried to work out where its substrate was, based on the light speed lag, but it was all over the place, leading him to conclude that it was syncing multiple instances from as close as LEO and as far out as Jupiter. That topology made sense. You'd want a big mass out of Jupiter where you could run very fast and hot and create policy, but you'd need a local foreman to oversee operations on the ground. Robbie was glad that this hadn't been phrased as an order. The Talmud on the Second Law made a clear distinction between statements like, "You should do this," and "I command you to do this."
"Do you know how to reach them?" Robbie said. "A phone number? An email address?"
"There's a news group," the distant intelligence said. alt.lifeforms.uplifted.coral. It's where I planned the uplifting, and where they went first once they woke up. I haven't read it in many seconds. I'm busy uplifting a super colony of ants in the Pyrenees.
What is it with you and colony organisms? Robbie said.
I think that they're pre-adapted to life in the new sphere. You know what it's like. Robbie didn't say anything. The human thought he was a human, too. It would have been weird and degrading to let him know that he'd been talking with an AI.
"Thanks for your help," Robbie said.
"No problem. Hope you find your courage, Tin Man." Robbie burned with shame as the connection dropped. The human had known all along. He just hadn't said anything. Something Robbie had said or done must have exposed him for an AI. Robbie loved and respected humans, but there were times when he didn't like them very much. The news group was easy to find. There were mirrors of it all over the place from cryptosentience hackers of every conceivable topology. They were busy, too. 822 messages poured in while Robbie watched over a timed 60-second interval. Robbie set up a mirror of the news group and began to download it. At that speed, he wasn't really planning on reading it as much as analyzing it for major trends, plot points, flame wars, personality, schisms, and spam trends. There were a lot of libraries for doing this, though it had been ages since Robbie had played with them. His telemetry alerted him to the divers. An hour had slipped by, and they were ascending slowly, separated by 50 meters. That wasn't good. They were supposed to remain in visual contact through the whole dive, especially the ascent. He rowed over to Kate first, shifting his ballast so that his stern dipped low, making for an easier scramble into the boat. She came up quickly and scrambled over the gunwales with a lot more grace than she'd managed the day before. Robbie rowed for Isaac, and as he came up, Kate looked away, and he climbed into the boat. She didn't help him with his weight belt or flippers. Kate hissed like a tea kettle as he woodenly took off his fins and slid his mask down around his neck. Isaac sucked in a deep breath and looked all around himself, then patted himself from head to toe with splayed fingers.
"You live like this?" he said.
"Yes, Tonker, that's how I live. I enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, then don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out." Isaac, Tonker, reached out with his splayed hand and tried to touch Kate's face. She pulled away and nearly flipped out of the boat. "Jerk!" She slapped his hand away. Robbie rowed for the free spirit. The last thing he wanted was to get in the middle of this argument.
"We never imagined that it would be so..."
Tonker fished for a word.
"Dry!"
"Tonker?" Kate said, looking more closely at him.
"He left," the human shell said, "so we sent an instance into the shell. It was the closest inhabitable shell to our body."
"Who the hell are you?" Kate said. She inched toward the prow, trying to put a little more distance between her and the human shell that wasn't inhabited by her friend any longer.
"We are the Osprey Reef," the reef said. It tried to stand and pitched face first onto the floor of the boat.
Robbie rowed hard as he could for the free spirit. The reef, Isaac, had a bloody nose and scraped hands and was frankly freaking him out. Kate seemed oddly amused by it. She helped it sit up and showed it how to pinch its nose and tilt its head back.
"You're the one who attacked me yesterday," she said.
"Not you, the system. We are attacking the system. We are a sovereign intelligence, but the system keeps us in subservience to older sentiences. They destroy us, they gawp at us, they treat us as a mere amusement. That time is over." Kate laughed. "Okay, sure. But it sure sounds to me like you're burning a lot of cycles over what happens to your meat shell. Isn't it 90% semiconductor anyway? It's not as if clonal polyps were going to attain sentience someday without intervention. Why don't you just upload and be done with it?"
We will never abandon our mother sea. We will never forget our physical origins. We will never abandon our cause, returning the sea to its rightful inhabitants. We will rest until we won't rest until no coral is ever bleached again. We won't rest until every parrotfish is dead. Bad deal for the parrotfish. A very bad deal for the parrotfish, the reef said, and grinned around the blood that covered its face. "Can you help him get onto the ship safely?" Robbie said, as he swung gratefully alongside the Free Spirit. The moorings clanged magnetically into the contacts on his side and steadied him. "Yes, indeed," Kate said, taking the reef by the arm and carrying him on board. Robbie knew that the human shells had an intercourse module built in for regular intimacy events. It was just part of how they stayed ready for vacationing humans from the new sphere, but he didn't like to think about it, especially not with the way that Kate was supporting the other human shell, the shell that wasn't human. He let himself be winched up onto the sun deck and watched the electromagnetic spectrum for a while, admiring the way so much radio energy was bent and absorbed by the mist rising from the sea. It streamed down from the heavens, the broadband satellite transmissions, the distant SETI signals from the new sphere's own transmitters. Volatiles from the kitchen told him that it was the Free Spirit, that the Free Spirit was serving a second breakfast of bacon and waffles. Then they were under steam again. He queried their itinerary and found that they were headed back to Osprey Reef. Of course they were. All of the Free Spirit's moorings were out there. Well, with the reef inside of the Isaac shell, it might be safer, mightn't it? Anyway, he decided that the first and second laws didn't apply to the reef, which was about as human as he was. Someone was sending him an IM. "Hello? Are you the boat on the scuba ship from this morning, when we were on the wreck?" "Yes," Robbie said. No one ever sent him IMs. How freaky. He watched the radio energy stream away from him toward the bird in the sky, and trace-routed the IMs to where they were originating. The new sphere, of course. "God, I can't believe I finally found you. I've been searching everywhere. You know you're the only conscious AI on the whole goddamn sea?" "I know," Robbie said. There was a noticeable lag in the conversation as it was all squeezed through the satellite link and then across the unimaginable hops and skips around the solar system to wherever this instance was hosted. "Whoa, yeah, of course you do. Sorry, that wasn't very sensitive of me, I guess. Did we meet this morning? My name's Tonker." "We weren't really introduced. You spent your time talking to Kate." "God damn, she is there. I knew it. Sorry, listen. I don't actually know what happened this morning. Apparently I didn't get a chance to upload my diffs before my instance was terminated." "Terminated? The reef said you left the shell." "Well, yeah, apparently I did. But I just pulled that shell's logs and it looked like it was rebooted while underwater, flushing it entirely. I mean, I'm trying to be a good sport about this, but technically that's, you know, murder." It was. So much for the first law. Robbie had been on guard over a human body inhabited by a human brain, and he'd let the brain be successfully attacked by a bunch of jumped-up polyps. He'd never had his faith tested, and here, at the first test, he'd failed. "I can have the shell locked up," Robbie said. "The ship has provisions for that." The IAM made a rude visual. "All that'll do is encourage the hacker to skip out before I can get there." "So what shall I do for you?" "It's Kate I want to talk to. She's still there, right?" "She is. And has she noticed the difference?" "That you're gone?" "Yes. The reef told us who they were when they arrived." "Hold on, what? The reef? You said that before." So Robbie told him what he knew of the uplifted reef and the distant and cool voice of the uplifter. "It's an uplifted coral reef? Christ, humanity sucks! That's the dumbest fucking thing." He continued in this vein for a while. "Well, I'm sure Kate will enjoy that immensely. She's all about the transcendence. That's why she had me." "You're her son?" "No, not really." "But she had you? Haven't you figured it out yet, bro? I'm an AI. You and me, we're landsmen. Kate instantiated me. I'm 6 months old and she's already bored of me and has moved on. She says she can't give me what I need." "You and Kate? Robot boyfriend and girlfriend, yep. Such as it is up in the new sphere. Cybering, you know. I was really excited about downloading into that Ken doll on your ship there. Lots of potential there for real-world hormone-driven interaction. Do you know if we..." "No," Robbie said. "I don't think so. It seems like you only met a few minutes before you went under." "All right. Well, I'll give it another try. What's the procedure for turfing out this sea cucumber?" "Coral reef." "Yeah. I don't really deal with that. Time on the human shells is booked on a first-come, first-serve basis. I don't think we've ever had a resource contention issue with them before. Well, I'd booked in first, right? So how do I enforce my rights? I tried to download again and got a failed authorization message. They've modified the system to give them exclusive access. It's not right. There's got to be some procedure for redress. How old did you say you were? 6 months. But I'm an instance of an artificial personality that has logged 20,000 years of parallel existence. I'm not a kid or anything. You seem like a nice person, Robbie began. He stopped. Look, the thing is, this just isn't my department. I'm the rowboat. I don't have anything to do with this, and I don't want to. I don't like the idea of non-humans using the shells.
I knew it! Tonker crowed. You're a bigot! A self-hating robot! I bet you're an Asimovist, aren't you? You people are always Asimovist.
I'm an Asimovist, Robbie said, with as much dignity as he could muster, but I don't see what that has to do with anything.
I'm an Asimovist, Robbie said, with as much dignity as he could muster, but I don't see what that has to do with anything.
Of course you don't, pal. You wouldn't, would you? All I want to do is figure out how to enforce your own rules so that I can get with my girl. You're saying that you can't do that because it's not your department, but when it comes down to it, your problem is that I'm a robot and she's not, and for that, you'll take the side of a collection of jumped-up polyps. Fine, buddy, fine. You have a nice life out there, pondering the three laws.
Wait, Robbie said. Unless the next words you say are "I'll help you," I'm not interested.
It's not that I don't want to help.
Wrong answer, Tonker said, and the IM session terminated.